For me, drinking and drugging was like breathing. I feel like I'm the star of the show. I'm the guy, I'm running the family business. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And when you have everybody in your life surrounding you with pain in their eyes and they're begging you to get help, you're not wanted in your own life anymore.
Adam Jablin. Adam is a transformational coach, recovery mentor, and a speaker. After battling addiction for years, Adam turned his life around, dedicating his journey to helping others to reclaim their life and become the hero of their own story.
I'm 18 years clean and sober. My battle, man, I didn't see it coming. You had no idea that you went from a bad habit to an unhealthy dependency to a full-out alcoholic and addict. Alcoholism and drug addiction is a disease. Now, to be classified as a disease, you need four things. But you take one of those things away, it's still pretty fucking bad.
Welcome to another episode of the Real Mentors Podcast. Real stands for Real Examples Altering Lives. And today, I'm honored and privileged to have my guest, colleague and friend, Adam Jablin. Adam is a transformational coach and much, much more, but I'll let that story be told by him because he's got an incredible one. Adam, welcome to the show today, my friend. How are you?
My brother, good to see you. I'm blessed to be on. It's a privilege.
This has been a long time coming, my friend. That's for damn sure. Tell our audience a little bit about your battle with addiction and how you got to this place where now you're in service of others.
I'm 18 years clean and sober. And July 14th, 2006 is my sobriety date, is my recovery birthday. My battle, man, I didn't see it coming. You know, a lot of times when I'm speaking to kids or groups or big audiences, you know, I try to explain alcoholism, addiction, so they can really feel it and see it, touch and feel. And I'll explain that my alcoholism and addiction was like a train far, far, far away, like a train far away. And I was playing on the tracks, you know? And each time the whistle just got closer, I thought I had a ton of time, you know? And each time the train stops, what that looks like is, you know, one time the train stops and your girlfriend goes, "Do you know what you said and how you behaved last night?" And then the next time the train stops and it's your boys being like, "Dude, you are out of control." And then the next time the train stops, you know, it's a DUI in college. And then the next time the train stops, it's a doctor saying, "How many times are you going to call that pharmacy?" You know what I mean? And you just think you have all the time on the tracks to play. And then all of a sudden, boom. And the train hits you, and you had no idea that you went from a bad habit to an unhealthy dependency to a full-out alcoholic and addict. So my battle was progressive. It was insidious. I didn't know what was happening to me. My definition of an alcoholic was a bum in Manhattan that was, you know, hadn't shaved and hadn't, you know, same clothes with a bottle in a paper bag, mumbling to himself, petting a cat that's not there. You know, my definition of an addict was like Pookie in New Jack City or just somebody like completely drawn and shooting up needles. And so since I didn't match those definitions, I didn't know there was anything wrong with me.
I know oftentimes all the time we tell ourselves this story that we've got shit under control. And this isn't just you and I, this is coming from my own mom, you know, who suffered with her own substance abuses and would always say, "Well, you know, I don't pick up a drink in the morning, so I'm good."
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we lie to ourselves all too often around using substances, whatever they may be, dry goods, alcohol, you name it, because we're putting a Band-Aid over something we don't truly have an understanding or haven't addressed in our lives yet. What was your rock bottom, if you don't mind sharing? What was that pivotal moment that woke you the fuck up? Was it instant? Was it over time? Did you try to get sober repeatedly before finally having it stick. What did that look like for you personally, Adam?
Nah, I never tried to get sober because I didn't know anything about recovery. I didn't know anything about alcoholism and addiction. I thought I was a work hard, play hard guy, man. Right. You know what I mean? I really, really did. And you know, I was masking a lot of wounds and emotions that I just had never dealt with, even from being the fat kid growing up in Jersey. You know, and putting up this facade and everything about image and everything and being about the outside and, you know, charisma and influence and making the money. And I was shallow inside, you know. So finally for me, drinking and drugging was like breathing. You know, I needed air just to survive. My bottom was an intervention. You know, my bottom was, you know, I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm the star of the show. Yeah, I'm the guy. I'm running the family business. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm in the gym. And when you have everybody in your life surrounding you with pain in their eyes and tears and shaking and basically letting you know you're not wanted in your own life anymore and they're begging you to get help. That was really my bottom. And listen, if it had happened one day before, Sean, one day before, I'm not lying, I still had enough fight, enough spit in me, enough Jersey in me, that they would have done it one day before. I've been like, listen, there's nothing fucking wrong with me. It's you guys, you know, get off my back, blah, blah. But I was sick and tired and sick and tired, and everything just aligned at the right time. And thank God.
You know, I've said that so many times that for me, it was one statement that came from my wife. Your breath smells like alcohol in the morning. And I never drank in the morning, maybe once in my entire life. It was my 42nd birthday during COVID. We threw this massive blowout party in the backyard and we just kept going in the morning. That's the only time I can remember ever picking up a drink early in the morning. It was all irrelevant because the stories I had told myself, like you said, it's just, there's nothing wrong with me. I can handle mine. Look at all the shit I've got. Look at the money I've made. I got a family. I got a nice house. Who are you to tell me anything? And she mentions your breath smells like alcohol and something. God touched me that morning. The 20 plus years that I had gone back into my notes and seen that I had wanted to conquer alcohol and substances in my life. It all came to a head that one day, and that's when I made the decision to get sober. And even though I didn't check myself in for another 3 or 4 weeks, that was it. It was just one moment. And like you said, if it was one day earlier, one day later, maybe it didn't stick. But for whatever reason, God decided they were going to use us. So tell us about that transformation and how you're now helping people with your hero project, because I see Superman in the background there. And I know you've got a great, great program. Is this just for people suffering with addiction or who's your audience?
No, man. I mean, look, I've attracted all walks of life. But really what it is I believe everybody is addicted to something and everybody is in a cycle and in a trap. So in the beginning, it was just working with people with alcoholism and addictions. And then it started becoming people with that obsessive mind, with that compulsive mind, with that more, 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 more. It's not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. And what happened was my clients became me. Like I was working with copies of me. You know, driven is a wonderful thing. Being driven is a wonderful thing. But not when it's at the expense of everything else. You know, being obsessive is a wonderful thing. But if you actually read the stories about Jordan and Kobe and, you know, look, there was actually more balance there than people realize, you know, and Kobe had worked out with Vanessa when he was gonna pick up the kids. That's why the helicopter existed. That's why it even came to be, because he wanted to be with the kids. So he took the chopper to practice, you know what I mean? And what happens is so many of our culture think that we have to be Jordan, Kobe, Goggins, Tony Robbins, not realizing that these people have actually designed their life in a way to thrive.
Right. It's not just what we see, which is pretty one-dimensional. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are these forms of addictions. You know, 100%. You know, look, alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and drug addiction is a disease.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. Now, to be classified as a disease, you need four things. You need to be progressive, right? Meaning over time you get worse. You need to be chronic, meaning it's always there. It's always there. You need to be primary, not secondary. An example of that, primary versus secondary. So one would be, I drove into the wall, crashed my car, and then I had a drink. That's secondary.
Right.
Primary would be, I had a few drinks and then I drove my car into the wall. That's primary, right? Right? And the last one is fatal. You have those four things, you are qualified as a disease, right? Wow. That's one side of the client. But you take one of those things away, it's still pretty fucking bad. You know what I mean? It's still pretty bad. It may be classified as a disorder, bipolar, or this or that. You know what I mean? So the mind can be obsessive and compulsive and like a record player, and you just get stuck and stuck and stuck, and you're constantly seeking out, what's the next thing? Is it this event? Is it this coach? Is it this methodology? Is it that, you know what I mean? What I do is I come in with my clients and we crack the code, and I take them on their hero's journey. Their hero's journey, which is why I call it the hero project. They're the project. And we are taking principles from the 12 steps, from personal development, biblical and spiritual practices, the road less traveled on the entrepreneurial journey, health and wellness and bodybuilding practical principle, and we're putting it into them, into them.
If you wouldn't mind expounding on the hero's journey for our audience, it's an obvious popular, you know, saying, and many people are familiar with it, but for those that aren't, sum up for us what the hero's journey is and how everyone can shift their mind to understand that their journey too is that of a hero.
100%. Hey, listen, you know, I didn't even know it was going to be that much back into culture. I had no idea. When I started the Hero Project, I did not know that it was going to become that popular again. And I started the Hero Project because I'm a Superman guy, right? It wasn't because of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. It was, I wanted to build a brand that represented what I stand for, how I feel and how I see other people. But the way I break down the hero's journey is a lot more basic than other people, right? And it's in every movie and every story and every known tradition in mankind. But let's break it down in three sections so people can see what the hero's journey is. First, there's the separation. This is step one. So they're separating from the old ideas, the old beliefs, the old ways of thinking. It could be separating from a home, separating from alcoholism and addiction, separating because you got to go play with your new team. You're separating from an old life, okay? You will see this in every story. So if it was Star Wars, you're going to see Luke Skywalker on Tatooine and he's about to leave and go on this adventure. But you're always going to see the same thing where you're about to go on this new adventure. Always within this adventure, you're going to meet an older, wiser mentor, somebody that is going to help you along the path. That's where I come in with my groups, with my clients, with my one-on-ones, right? And that old wise mentor then brings you into stage two, which is the initiation process. This is where you're going to learn new ideas, new ways of believing, new ways of thinking, new concepts, new exercises that you're actually going to implement and are made for you. They're tailor-made for you to actually get through life. You know, it's not cookie cutter. It's not if you know, we're going to do chest and back on Monday and shoulders and arms. No, it's made for you to thrive. But you'll see these themes in life where somebody needs somebody to show them through, right? Eventually, you have to slay the dragon. And that dragon that everybody fears is the fear within themselves. There's a story that I'm not doing what I want to do, that I'm not facing what I have to face, that I'm not being the person I always wanted to be. And there's such a fear and limitation and nonsense. Right? Such nonsense. Finally, you slay that dragon. You have the hard conversations. You make the difficult decisions. You know, you really put your life on the line, you know? And I've done this countless times. And then there's the triumphant return home. Meaning, you don't become the star of the show, although you are the star of the show, and then just go like this to everybody, and it's all about significance and me, 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 and it's an MTV video. You come home a better version of yourself, and you're passing this on to your loved ones, and you're passing this on to your community, and you're passing this on to your kids, and it becomes a part of you. Because if you don't pass it on, if you don't give away what you have, you don't get to keep it. And when you go on this journey, it becomes a part of your lifestyle.
And you become the mentor now.
100%. And you see it in every area of your life. You see it with your wife. You see it with your husband. You see it with your kids. You see it in your company. You see it in your communities. You see it in a 12-step program. You see it on your football team. You see it on your basketball team, right? You start realizing this whole thing is this journey. And it's laws of giving and receiving. You know, it's laws of surrendering. It's laws of taking action. It's laws of having the courage, but also having the faith. It's laws of being, God, having that grip, that grit, that actual grit to get through anything, but also trusting in something bigger than yourself, right? You blend all of these things. So it's action and surrender at the same time.
That was a great way to sum it up, so I appreciate it. And you know what? We like short and sweet, because the reality is this is the world we live in, and if we want to attract attention, we've got to package it in a manner that is easily digested so that we can grab that attention and hook the potential person that we hope to influence or impact. And we're all guilty of having shorter attention spans than we did, let's say, 10 years ago. So you also really, really summarize, put together, and eloquently describe how the addictive mind can serve us. So whereas we were balls to the wall with drinking and partying and all the debauchery, we can apply those same techniques to our life in a healthy way now. And I see it on your social media feed daily. You see it on mine. The gym is a non-negotiable. For you, it's the yoga now. It was previously the running. And I just want to talk a little bit about why the addictive mind is so powerful and how it serves somebody, so that if they're struggling with addiction still, maybe they have a different lens to view that perceived weakness as, because it is a strength.
It's a total strength, and you can harness that power. And look, if you need to use the word addicted, you could be addicted to good things. You know what I mean? You could be addicted to good things, but you have to harness that energy within you, right? So addictions can be very, in the beginning, be an obsession. You're obsessed, but an obsession can also send you to the grave. You could be obsessed around the world. So you got to switch that obsession into a passion. Right? That this is something that you love to do. Not that the obsessive mind goes, you know, and just takes over. You know, then you'll have a craving for it, right? You'll have a craving for whatever that is. Now, you could have cravings for alcohol, drugs, porn, shopping, Instagram, TikTok.
Ice cream.
Ice cream, you know what I mean? You could create, right? But you could also turn that craving into a clarity of where you're going, what your vision is, why you're doing this, right? And those little shifts give you purpose. You could also have a compulsion, right? Trust me, dog. I have had compulsions. You know what I mean? Where my car used to just drive itself to the liquor store or to where the pharmacy or wherever the hell I had to go. But you eventually, you know, I had to learn a new way of life. You know, I also would have a compulsion to eat certain things. I would have a compulsion to pick up the phone. Sometimes I would even now have compulsions with social media. I mean, this is the greatest and the worst thing in the world, right? So you have to discipline that compulsion.
You mentioned purpose. I think what really allows someone who identified or who was struggling with any kind of abuse or addiction, whatever you want to label it, and they find sobriety, the ones that really thrive are the ones that are fortunate enough and able to find that purpose. And it usually has to do with something greater than themselves, which we know as we're on our purpose-driven missions ourselves. How can somebody who doesn't know help tap into or find that purpose, brother? Because I've also seen you eloquently describe that process and how someone can take themselves through, you know, this exercise to find their purpose. Because everybody has one, whether or not we're tapped into it or not, or we've even heard an inkling of what that might be in ourselves.
Yeah, well, it sounds easy, but believe it or not, it's actually really challenging to do. You know, it really is, because we all have a difficult time getting vulnerable and honest, mostly with ourselves, just alone. But if you find that thing that either really scares you or that you really love to do, it could be one or the other. You know, everybody's at a different stage of life. If you would ask me 18 years ago, what really scared me? I would be like, the amount I'm drinking and doing drugs. But I can you imagine me writing that alone? Like I wrote some things down by myself, but I mean, I had to put the mask on right away. And you also need to be in a really, really healthy place in life. So if there's something you really love, if it's, you know, it could be music, it could be dancing. I don't know what it is, but you find the thing that really scares you, right? And you make a decision that pleasure or that pain, you're gonna share this. You're actually gonna share it with somebody, because when you share something, you cut it in half. And now we're, Sean, now you and I are both holding it.
Right.
If it's painful and I'm sharing something hard, now I just shared it with a brother and I'm not alone. We're both sharing it. If it's something enjoyable and I'm like, Sean, I'm gonna be in Manhattan, that Broadway show's finally coming out. Yep. Will you please come? I get to share it with you, right? I get to share something enjoyable with you. Believe it or not, both ways takes courage, right? So something you're terrified of or something you love, write it down. Two, share it with one person that you really, really trust, because now you're going to cut it in half, right? And three, discipline yourself every day to find the joy in overcoming that.
You've really rebuilt your life, and I've seen it in the short time, in the few years that we've, you know, followed each other and known each other since meeting at, you know, Tony's Platinum Partnership. I've seen the progress in you, and you've probably seen the progress in me. And Amen. One of the biggest things was your relationship with your son and you guys working out. How did sobriety impact your relationship with your children? Because I think, if nothing else, the brothers and sisters that are out there struggling with these things still, who have children, they have their whys, but maybe they're just not seeing it through that lens yet. How has your life changed with them?
Man. I get emotional, dude. Sean. My kids tearing up. My kids know me. And I know my kids. They know me. I don't judge them. I'm a safe place for them to land. I teach them to trust their instincts. I ask them when they need to make a hard decision, right? To trust their mind, trust their hearts, and trust their connection to God. I teach them the difference between love and approval. I never knew this stuff. My kid, Olivia, Ozzy, I will always love you. I will love you unconditionally. But there's no fucking way I'm gonna approve of everything you do. And if you keep seeking for my approval, thinking it's love, you're gonna do that with other people in the world. Mm. You can kill somebody and you can't lose my love. Do you understand? Like, I will be there. I will visit you every day in jail. Doesn't mean I approved of it. And if you think you're gonna go down my path and you're gonna make the decisions, you think I'm gonna approve it, but you will never lose my love. And along this journey, I've seen my daughter thrive and lean on me in times where she really needed me. My son and I just bond and he gets to know me. Like we've bonded in the gym and I never pushed that on him and I never put that on him. And, you know, people that I used to grow up and admire who become friends check in on him, like Mike O'Hearn and Lee Labrada and Dorian Yates. These are like idols to me. And these people have become friends and they check on my son. But my kids know me. They know that I have faith in God. They know that I live by spiritual principles. They know that I take risks and I go for it. They know they're the most important thing in my life. But they also know that I am an alcoholic and addict in recovery. And without that, none of this happens.
Wow. How old is your daughter?
18.
So neither of them know you as that version of yourself. They know you as the ever-improving version of yourself. And I actually, now I get emotional, but
yeah,
you know, my daughter, although she was young, I don't know that she'll ever remember me being that way because she was already 4, almost 5 when I got sober. And I'm more reflective of the time that I know that I missed because I see my son now who's 2.5 and the difference in the dynamic of the relationship. And I have that to measure against. And if we're being honest, comparison is the kiss of death. And I find myself at times being like, wow, bro, what if, you know, but there's no what if, you can't go back. But I just see the difference. And it's not to say that my daughter doesn't have everything she needs and didn't always have everything she needs, but she didn't have the best version of me for the first 4.5 years. And that's not even to mention my wife not having the best version of me. So I think God puts us exactly where we need to be. And while I am reluctant to beat myself up because I know that there's no good in that, I'd be remiss to say it doesn't cross my mind at times when I see the relationship I have with my son and how appreciative of the little moments I am versus remembering that I just drowned myself in a bottle, Netflix, and be in the house but not be present. That was my MO, or be out to dinners with the fellas building the business I have. But boy, what a difference. And what a difference the relationship I have with her now is, and I will have in the future. So our whys are pretty evident. And again, I even though you don't maybe know it, I'd like to thank you for putting that journey with them out there, you know, on your social media post and just encouraging me to continue down the path of sobriety and hitting the gym with my little man when he gets older and my daughter as well. Because you know what? There is a beautiful future for those of us who are courageous enough to look in the mirror and say, I can be better. And it just so happens that I have both memories to draw from. And it just gives me that much more appreciation in the present for what I do have. And anybody who's listening, who's struggling with addiction, and in their gut knows that they want to get sober, because we all need to come to that realization on our own. Just know that there truly is another life on the other side of sobriety. It is not cheesy. It is not cliche. You'll hear it in the rooms, a life that you never dreamt of. The shit is true. It's absolutely true. And like many things, it's my opinion that people are afraid to get sober because they will not know what life looks like on the other side of not picking up. And for me, that was a big, big stumbling block for years and years, if not decades. How can I go from being the life of the party and the one pushing, hey, let's drink more, let's go out here, let's do that, to, I'm good. And I realized when I host parties that people drink less. And I'm just like, oh, what a moron. But now I drive people in a different way.
Same wake-up call, bro. I had that same wake-up call when I went to parties and I was like, oh my God, it was me. Yeah, I mean, people weren't even drinking that much. Yeah, I'm thinking like, oh, what are they gonna think? Yeah, I was like, oh, it
was me. You were the fucking degenerate. I was the same. We'd wake up after a UFC fight party or something, and there'd be like a dozen people, and they'd sleep over, and because they all live far, and then wake up in the morning and be like, did we drink all of that last night? I mean, we were going to 2 a.m. The fight be over at 1, we still keep going. Yeah. And then we wake up and hit the mimosas and the brunch. And it was just like, holy shit. I always joke, I'm 46. I look younger because I must be pickled. All that alcohol.
Exactly. Because
it kept me fresh.
And so, you know, but I love that part of us. You know, people laugh about, like, A, I'll show people all the time. And when we met, we saw it in each other. I have never shared with anybody that I'm an alcoholic and addict in recovery and them go, oh my God, I just don't see that in you. I mean, you and I have energy. I mean, everyone's like, yeah, you're a fucking maniac. Yeah. And still to this day, dude, it's almost like a joke or a theme with God or the universe. But dude, to this day, and this is humility, this is not ego, but if you and I sat down at a table, every single time the waitress and the waiter brings me the wine and cocktail, because it just still has that energy of this guy's the maniac. You know?
I'm gonna start paying attention to that, but absolutely.
Yeah. But dude, I'm so grateful that I would have been able to shift that, you know, to shift that and use it to good and use it to help another person. And look, we're all God's children. We're all God's children. And I really believe, you know, if you want to make spirituality and biblical principles easy, it's, you know, just love on his kids. Treat his kids the way he wants to be treated. You know, it can get crazy out there, right? Trust me, it can get crazy. From the New Testament to the Old Testament to Buddhism to Kabbalah to New Age stuff to energy to spirituality to I'll only use the universe. I mean, it can make you nuts.
Yeah. And I think people need to give themselves the grace to understand that this shit is a journey. Life in general, sobriety, just another part of life. But you need to understand that this is not going to happen overnight. And it's not going to happen in months. And it's not going to happen in years. And there's no destination. There's no finish line. It is an ongoing process of betterment. And I will use a term in recovery that I don't necessarily agree with about recovery, but I do agree with life, which is like falling off the wagon. Yeah. What do they say? Yeah. It's part of recovery. Slipping up essentially is part of recovery. I think that's the case in life. We go down this path and then we're still fighting the demons and we get kind of pulled back. And I realize whenever I'm about to do something decidedly different or good in my life or big, let's just say big, something new and exciting, the old guy shows up and he wants to sabotage that. And that speaks to the identity. And we've learned through our mentor, Tony Robbins, that we need to create a new identity for ourselves that pulls us toward it, as opposed to us muscling through. So many of us that are successful find any level of success, whatever that looks like for whoever's listening, we're muscling through. We're just fucking, just chugging. And all the while we're doing more work than we necessarily need to. How can someone create an identity that pulls them toward this new vision of themselves? What does that look like? What are the exercises we might be able to look to for that inspiration?
Man, I do this with my clients. You know, once we sit down and we've been talking for about 30 or 40 minutes, once we get raw and naked and vulnerable, I want them to start envisioning how that person is even dressing, how that person walks, how that person talks. What are they thinking? What are they feeling? You know, I mean, we actually start playing with it. You have to have the balls to think big. The one thing that drives me nuts in this world is that I don't constantly mean financially. I mean, think big, big. What does your life look like? Like, listen, I know people with tons of money And they live in such lives of mediocrity and certainty. It's the most boring life over and over and over. And it's the same restaurants and it's a different version of the car.
Oh my God, are you talking about my neighborhood?
Like, I want you to think big, like a life of adventure. Like, what does that look like? Do you know what I mean? What would it look like? Would you want to try skydiving? Where would you want to travel? What excites you? Are you into your religion? Would you want to see the Catholic Church in Rome? You want to go see the temples in Jerusalem? Do you want to go see the safari in Africa? Who do you want to travel with? What are the people? You've never been to a seminar? Would you like to see a seminar? What concerts do you want to go to? What kind of music do you like? You know what I mean? Don't be somebody that didn't see Jordan play or didn't see Kobe play. Do you want to go see a Laker game before LeBron retires? You know what I mean? Did you not see Brady play? Go see, like, what does this look like to actually participate in your own life? Dude, we play it out. I have them do it. And before you know it, they see them wearing themselves in a black shirt, but they see themselves trying this restaurant. And you see that. And we start taking the actions to do it, to make the reality, this reality, match their inner thoughts. So you just have to have the courage and the balls to try something new. Our mentor, as you said, would always call that uncertainty. A lot of people I work with are certainty whores, me included. Yep. That's what alcoholism and addiction was. I knew exactly how I was gonna feel. Well, I thought I knew exactly how I was gonna feel. The way I designed my life was certainty. The way I designed my training was certainty. It was certainty. I know, I know, I know. You just gotta get out of this I know, I know, I know nonsense and go, I don't know. I don't know.
It's a big repeating pattern. And yeah. I joke, you know, you're talking about my neighborhood. I'm fortunate enough now to live in an upper middle class neighborhood here in Long Island. And my wife and I try not to go out to the same restaurants. So we'll be like, let's go somewhere we've never been before. And we made it our point to do that for an entire summer this past summer, to go to a new place once a week. Because what we found is, aside from being the youngest, brownest people when we go out around here, it was the same fucking people every time. They go to the same restaurants. I had a friend that he's done extremely well for himself. God bless him. He goes to the same fucking restaurant every Saturday and sits in the same fucking table and listens to the same people. And it's just like, I can't do this. And I did it for a while to realize I couldn't do it. I was like, this is not me. I need uncertainty in my life. But now I'm wrangling it to a point of discipline, some certainty, and still leave some spice in there. Because, well, yes,
100%.
We cannot be that box. And I wanted to say this earlier, and I guess this is a good time. For me, AA didn't work. And I'll tell you why. This is always my disclaimer when I say this, and you can appreciate
it. It's okay.
I will never shit on any of those programs because they've impacted more lives than I can ever hope to impact a fraction of. However, for me, this person here, Sean Martin individual, I was fortunate enough to go into a Big Book Dumpers group locally. I didn't walk into a soft AA group. I walked into the group, the 164 group. And thank God I did. That book is amazing. But every time I was there and I was looking at the 12 steps, which are essentially three steps, I believe, combined into, you know, four little manageable pieces for each. What it was I was looking at the board and I didn't have those shortcomings when it came to others and my relationships with others. Yes, my drinking was impacting my family, and these are undeniable truths. But I couldn't wrap my head around the powerlessness part. Yes, I was powerless over my addictions, but I still couldn't wrap my head around the powerless part. And I was fortunate enough to pick a sponsor who I was with for a short period of time because him and I were at odds with the Tony Robbins thing. So I was a Tony Date with Destiny, and you know how intense that is. And there is a huge focus on spirituality. And he felt the need to keep reminding me that God's the only one that could keep you sober and you need to go catch a meeting And, you know, in my heart, I'm like, dude, you know how much money I spent? And you know how many amazing human beings I'm around? I'm not going to just leave and catch a random meeting with random alcoholics in South Florida. That's just not going to work for me. So we were at odds. But I thank God for that man, and I'll tell you why. If nothing else, he came into my life to convince me that when I pray, I should get on my knees and do it. And that's what he was there for. And I got to my 6 month, I got my coin, I got a big hug, I got a bunch of attaboys on the way back to my seat toward the back. And they're like, Sean. And I turned around, I was like, Sean. I was like, oh, my name's Sean and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't say it. I didn't knowingly not say it. I just didn't say it. I couldn't wrap my head around, nor did it work for me to consider myself an alcoholic. Again, just me, brother. Just me. And I know you know plenty of people that the program works for, obviously, and you know quite a few probably that didn't necessarily take to the program were able to stay sober. I never for a second think that I can pick up a drink and be good. I'm not stupid. But in terms of the structure of AA, I am somebody who just admitted to being very unstructured. So that was like a force for me to be, ah, you're not putting me in a box. And again, that could change for me, brother, because I said the same thing about church and I am now in a church. So I am not beyond redemption and I am not saying a bad thing about any program, but that's the thought process. And again, I am spiritually, emotionally aware. Most people may not have that same confidence in their awareness, but for me, that was my AA story. But I did go on to, you know, again, I did go on to meet plenty of people and do the practices that many people do to stay sober. But it wasn't necessarily in that room. But I am so fortunate I got exposed to the serious, hardcore group that I did because it showed me exactly what it takes for most people to stay sober. And I just think the fact that God put this purpose in me and I'm chasing it down is a big reason for my sobriety. And first and foremost, that starts with my family and that story I told you. And then it, you know, transcended to changing and impacting the lives of inner city youth and people that I'm coming across in the nonprofit space. But without those two things, it would be absolutely fucking psychotic and foolish for anybody to think that they could stay sober on their own. So I said all that to say, that's my journey. But I wanted to explain it to you because I think you, as someone who's so well-steeped and knowledgeable about that whole process, could maybe offer me some insight on that. Because I'm all ears. I'm a student of life, brother.
Yeah, sure. I am a 12-step guy, right? And that sacred fellowship saved my life, and I still do a lot of work in it. And it's still the backbone of kind of how I see the world, right?
Right.
Because those steps saved my life, brought me in union with God. Now, having said that, 12-step communities don't own sobriety and recovery. And there are many different methods to find that spiritual contact, you know. And Tony, and he'll be the first one to say it, doesn't own personal development. And he'll always say, if you don't like me, go find somebody else, but get into something. You know, and even though I think he's the GOAT,
right,
Jordan doesn't own the number 23. All of these modalities and all of these ideas are there for you when you need them, you know, and they could be something very special or they could be not for you. But eventually, if it's steeped in truth, if it's steeped in truth, it will have a component that brings you into connection with God, the divine, invisible forces, the universe, whatever that languaging is to fit you.
I needed to be in those rooms just to get to this place. So the rooms serve me exactly as they were designed to serve me. It's just that my term there may have been shorter, but the rules that I live by are still those rules. So there's nothing but truth to those rules.
Yeah, hey, listen, there are people that will go to 10,000 Tony events. He knows them, he loves them, and will never change. And then there's somebody that goes to one and is speaking on his stages a year later. You know, it's like, you just got to find what works for you, you know? And look, that's why I love coaching people in groups and my athletes and my whomever it is, because that's why I call it a project, right? It's not a program, right? It's not like P90X, chest right. and back one day, right? And it's not the 12, like, I like taking people to realize they're an individual. It's like building a house. And where do you want the kitchen? And where do you want this, you know, the living room? Where everybody is a project. And I bring these principles in, these principles, because some are going to stick with people and some aren't.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, people could go there for years and do nothing different. Again, I was so blessed and fortunate to have Dan Martell as my partner. I think I told you the story, maybe not. At Date with Destiny, when you and I first met, but in passing, my partner on day two tapped me on the shoulder when we were doing when he was in the studio that they only used that one time, I remember, for Date with Destiny, because it was too many people. And then that tent outside that they were serving that god-awful food, guy taps me on the shoulder, you want to be my partner? Turns out to be Dan Martell, who I don't even know who the fuck Dan Martell is till I Google him and I get home. But wow. I mean, just wow. He's the one who inspired me to get on social. I wasn't even on social at the time, and you can see how far that's gotten. But you just said it. Some people can go for years, not change a thing. Some people can go, and next year they're on stage. I saw Dan Martell go from great to fucking absolutely amazing within 14 months, be on Tony's stage. He just graced the stage yesterday or the day before for Business Mastery again, and he was my partner. This is how God loves me.
Dan's a good man. Dan's the real deal.
Good man, real deal, no bullshit, complete inspiration, recovering fat guy, recovering alcoholic, you name it. That guy's overcome everything. So to have him as my partner was not a mistake. It was God telling me that I too am meant for great things. And
amen.
I have heard the call, I've answered the bell, and I've gone off on my own hero's journey. Even though we're just getting started, I am so excited to see what the future holds for my journey. I am so excited to see what the future is already providing for you. And what does the future hold for Adam? And tell us a little bit about your new book with Dion, the rock and roll philosopher, because I see you making the rounds right now. Tell us about that, brother.
So, you know, I've been blessed and privileged that 18 years ago, well, I met Dion when I was 12 years old. Dion's a rock and roll Hall of Fame legend. Many of his musical hits are known, from The Wanderer, Run Around Sue, Why Must I Be a Teenager in Love, Ruby Baby. He was on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Only two artists were on the cover of that with all those faces. It was Bob Dylan and Dion.
Wow.
He's a legend. You know, he's the idol of many stars that we know today. Springsteen looked up to Dion. You know, Bob Dylan looked up to Dion. Eric Clapton looked up to Dion. And 18 years ago, when I got clean and sober, he became my mentor and took me under his wing. So it's an honor to have we wrote a book over the last 4 years called Dion, the Rock and Roll Philosopher, Conversation of Recovery, Faith, Life, and Music. Bishop Barron contributed the book, Paul Simon, Eric Clapton, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Stevie Van Zandt. And one of the reasons I'm really proud of this, because it's a book on mentorship. It's a book of an older, wiser mentor, like in the hero's journey, passing down his love, passing down his wisdom, passing down his knowledge, right? And when we were doing this for so many years, finally, I once said to him, Dion, I wish everybody could hear it the way we talk about it. And he's like, why don't we write a book? And the thing came to life.
Wow.
You know, the thing came to life. So it's been a wild journey so far. We spoke in front of a church. It was 1,800 men. We had our first book signing in Barnes and Nobles. There was 400 people there. Awesome. And it's really starting to have an impact. And bro, my future is, I am in a place where I really, really want to serve people that are no nonsense, that are all in, that mean what they say and say what they mean, that are not fluff, that want that really want to just be pointed in the right direction and go. You know what I mean? That have that spark, that have that fire, that have that ignition, ignited for life, but at the same time, have that thing that was keeping me stuck. You know, and when I can't tell you what it's like, Sean, but when I'm serving another person, when I'm out of myself, I am the happiest. And when I'm in myself, right, from responsibilities or bills or marketing or this or that, it's the Adam Show. The Adam Show is what got me drunk. You know what I mean? So I really want to help as many people on the planet that are suffering from the way I suffered as I can. You know, and the thing is, I make it fun. I make it enjoyable. I make it entertaining, but it works. The work works.
Absolutely, brother. It has been an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to finally chop it up with you for more than a couple of minutes at a Tony event in passing or on the internet. Where can our audience find out more information about you and the Hero Project?
Yeah, sure. So my website is adamjablin.com. You could also go on all the social media. Instagram is my main handle, which I will reply to you myself. At Adam Jablin, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, all the stuff. All the
TikTok
stuff.
It was down for what? I don't know, 8 hours yesterday.
They're smart.
It's funny.
Yeah, but reach out anytime, and me and my team love to serve and love to help. That's why we're here. And happy to be here.
Thank you. And again, great to have you. Thank you all for tuning in again to another episode of the Real Mentors Podcast. Make sure to follow Adam on his journey. And if you need help with yours, don't be afraid to reach out. His heart is as big as his mission. Thank you, guys. And as always, let's get it.